and welcome back to the greatest European podcast out there in English that we know of. Is that enough caveats?
Yeah, I think so. We can go with that. We're not going to get sued by anyone.
Good. It's good to be careful. This is Katie in Paris, and I'm joined by our very own cross-border worker, Dominic Kramer. Like, where even are you? I lose track.
I am now in Strasbourg. I have been crossing many borders this week, actually, yeah, because I was in Basel for a while. And I was fascinated that it turns out Basel Airport's actually in France.
Despite the city being in Switzerland.
I've been learning so much. I went to the European Parliament.
Oh, yeah.
I'm in one of the hearts of Europe. And I thought, why not on my free morning go and check out the Parliament? And it's such a dorky place. But I had loads of fun and it's free. So people should go.
What do you mean it's dorky?
I don't know. But like every photo I took when I was in there, I looked like the biggest dork ever. And maybe that is just because I am the biggest dork ever. Mm. But there was something about the environment that makes you feel like, oh my God, I'm a bit embarrassed that I'm doing this. And yet, stepping into the parliamentary chamber or the hemicycle, it felt significant. I think just like going to visit it makes you feel a little bit more connected to the institutions. And there's also some really nice architecture. So I would recommend it.
Aww.
You've been to the one in Brussels, haven't you? But not the one in Strasbourg.
Yeah, we've now been to all of the European parliaments between us.
And I actually need to listen back to your Bursting the Bubble episode again because I'd kind of forgotten some of it. And I was having to think again, like, why do they have a parliament in Brussels and Strasbourg? It's so silly.
It is really silly. And I think the MEPs ask themselves that question, why are we doing this? Probably every day. The answer is France. But yeah, listen back, Bursting the Bubble part one. Part two is coming up in November. It's very exciting.
Ooh.
So how are you enjoying being in my country of residence, France?
Ooh, yeah, France is different. I noticed that French people don't like dry ice.
What?
You know dry ice, the thing you used to have at school discos, you know, that like fake smoke thing?
Oh yeah, that they have in like Laser Quest and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we have dry ice in the show I'm performing in here in Strasbourg. And when we made the piece in Germany last year, the German audiences were really relaxed about the dry ice. But here in Strasbourg, the audience were like all coughing and covering their faces when the dry ice came off. And that's my little observational nugget about France for the week.
French people don't like dry ice.
Yeah.
Yeah. After like living here for nearly 5 years, I hadn't noticed that before. It just hasn't really come up. But I'm going to go and ask my neighbours what the deal is with dry ice.
Go and check it out.
What are we talking about on the show this week?
Later on in the show, we're going to be talking to the Polish poet and writer Jacek Denel. Because there's been an alarming trend of hatred and violence directed towards LGBTQ plus people in his country recently. And it's not an easy thing to talk about, but it's important that we don't shy away from discussing this hideous thing that is playing out within the borders of the European Union. But don't worry, it's not all doom and gloom this week. First, we have good week, bad week, and apologies for its entire Dutchness this week. I'm clearly missing home whilst in France. Who's had a good week, Katie?
So as you say, this is like a Dutch-only good week, bad week. But I did actually want to talk about the elections in Kosovo. But they're happening just as we record this. So I'm not exactly sure who has had a good week there. I'm hoping it's going to be this quite badass candidate, Vjosa Osmani, who may or may not become Kosovo's first female prime minister. But the results are not yet in, so we're going to have to wait and see. So instead, good week is, as I say, Netherlands inspired. I am giving good week to the Dutch-led team who have designed this massive floating thing, I believe that's a technical term, to clean the sea. Specifically, they are trying to clear up an island of plastic in the middle of the Pacific Ocean that is three times the size of France. It is massive.
And as I've discovered this week, France is enormous.
Yeah, it's way bigger than your country.
Thanks.
Sorry, it's not about the size, it's about what you do with it. But yeah, you might ask, like, how is it possible that there can be a heap of trash quite that big that we don't really talk about very much? It's like big enough to have its own government, this thing. I don't know why we don't talk about it more. But we're going to talk about it today because for the first time, this massive plastic sweepy up thing has actually managed to capture some plastic from the giant trash heap. And it's been quite a few years coming. You might remember there being quite a lot of hype around this a few years ago. It kind of started with a TED Talk that went viral. The TED Talk was by this Dutch kid, Boyan Slat. He was 18 at the time and studying engineering at university. And he talked about how he'd been on holiday in Greece and was really shocked to see that when he went diving, there was more plastic in the water than there were fish.
When talking about environmental issues in general, I think a common response is, well, that's a long way off. That's for our children to worry about. So, hello, here I am. Why don't we just clean it up?
And he'd been thinking about how to fix this problem, and he realised that we can't just send boats to pick all of this stuff up. It would be insanely expensive and also really polluting. Hence the idea for the big sweepy thing that could collect the trash for us. The TED Talk went massive, and it allowed Boyan to eventually raise more than $2 million in crowdfunding to develop this giant 600-metre-long thing that is now out there collecting trash in the Pacific. But it's taken quite a while to get up and running. There were loads of scientists who helped develop it, many of them working as volunteers. And they obviously had to find a way of doing it that wouldn't hurt any fish. And they wanted to use the power of the currents to move about sweeping up the rubbish. So it's been quite a lot of work. Actually, an earlier trial that they did was a bit of a disaster, and the device broke in January. But finally this week, the Ocean Cleanup Project announced that for the first time, the device had managed to sweep up some plastic. Big things you can see in the pictures. There's like fishing equipment and crates and a wheel in there, but also tiny little microplastics that are just about a millimetre long.
What do they do with the plastic when they've collected it?
So the idea is that now a big boat will go out and collect it all so that it can be recycled. And the team are working on strengthening the device so that it'll be able to hold on to what it's caught for longer and reduce the need for boat trips. I think at the moment it'll have to go out every couple of months. It's obviously like not something that's alone going to solve all the horrific things that we've been doing to the planet, but it is a hopeful project, and I think we need hopeful projects.
Yeah, hopeful project designed by a teenager. Ugh.
He makes me feel bad.
Yeah, me too.
All we've made is a podcast.
And we're very much not teenagers anymore.
Speak for yourself. I'm still young at heart. Who's had a bad week?
It was a bad week for Dutch commuters who last Tuesday were held up during rush hour on the motorway due to a protest from tractor-driving farmers who were slowly trudging their way down the motorway, making lots of people late for work.
That sounds like France.
Yeah, that's true. It does. Why were they protesting? Well, it's complicated, really complicated, and I may regret agreeing to try and explain this, but it's a huge story, and I think it's about time we talked about it. It's all about that nitrogen, and before you switch over to another more interesting podcast that doesn't talk about nitrogen, hear me out, it's important. Back in May, earlier this year, the top Dutch court ruled that the regulations around building and farming were not strong enough to protect the environment from dangerously high levels of nitrogen.
Like, could I just ask quickly, why is nitrogen bad for us?
Yeah, I was worried you were going to ask that. It's really complicated, and it's bad for many different reasons. One is that it can function as a greenhouse gas. That's okay. An obvious one. Another one is that it seriously harms biodiversity and forests and rivers. It gets into the soil and makes the soil too nitrogen rich, which then also affects the plants that are growing and can really damage the wildlife that eat the plants. Basically, it's all round bad. And in fact, it's so bad that the Netherlands are in breach of EU law, which is why the Dutch court ruled that the regulations needed changing. And in the meantime, they have halted 18,000 construction projects, including new roads, airports, housing blocks, projects that are estimated to be worth around 14 billion euros.
Wait, so that no one's building anything?
No, well, there is still some building happening, but 18,000 of the projects have been cancelled. So basically, hardly anyone's building anything.
Whoa.
So it's a ruling that has pretty massive consequences for the country. The court ruling forces the coalition government to come up with ideas of how to reduce the levels of nitrogen in the atmosphere, in the earth, and in the plants. And that is proving rather difficult for them to agree on. One of the suggestions is to lower the speed limit on many roads, not by quite as much as the tractors did on Tuesday, but by a significant amount, particularly on roads near nature reserves, where the wildlife is seriously threatened by these emissions. Another part of the package of solutions was to halve, yes, halve the number of pigs and chicken that are farmed in the Netherlands.
Oh, but Dutch people love eating pigs and chickens.
Yeah, they do. And they love farming them as well. It's a, for such a small country and such a densely populated country, they do a lot of farming. So this was the idea that got the farmers really angry, so angry that they drove down the motorway very slowly. They feel they're being scapegoated. Mm. And of course, it is understandable that they are concerned that their businesses will suffer. But it does seem that they are going to have to bear some of the brunt of this ruling, as so much of the nitrogen is caused by farming. And environmentalists say that the way they have been farming up until now was unsustainable. And they have up until now been given too much slack by the regulations. So we'll still have to see where this all lands and what the government finally agree on. They did announce some suggestions a few days ago, and environmentalists said that it didn't go anything like far enough and that they're going to be going back to the courts. But the farmers did get some compromises after their protest, such as subsidies, if they're willing to give up farming altogether or if they're willing to make efforts to reduce their emissions. So was it a bad week for the farmers? Perhaps not. But it was definitely a bad week for the commuters stuck behind them.
Mm. This all sounds quite familiar to me, because I guess a bit like with the Gilets Jaunes protests in France, like, people are really increasingly sensitive to the idea of having to take a disproportionate hit for the transition to becoming more eco-friendly in general. Like in France, it was kind of working class French people in the provinces saying, like, why should it be my petrol bills going up when billionaires aren't being forced to pay more for this? And in the same way, I kind of get where the Dutch farmers are coming from. You know, they're saying, like, why are you trying to shut down our farms when there are other industries that are also contributing to the problem? And you all love eating the stuff that we produce for you. So I don't know. I feel like government's going to have to come up with a better way of managing this stuff.
Although, the difference between the French situation and this is that farmers aren't necessarily all kind of working class people in the Netherlands. Apparently, according to the Central Bureau of Statistics in the Netherlands, 18% of farmers are millionaires.
What?
Yeah.
I need to quit and become a Dutch farmer.
So some people are saying, yeah, don't feel too sorry for all of the farmers. The average income of a farmer is way above the average income of a normal Dutch person.
This is so interesting. So they're running kind of quite big operations on average, perhaps.
Yeah, some of them. I mean, I'm sure there are smaller farmers who aren't making huge amounts of money. There will be people who are losing out. But it's not as clear-cut as you would imagine.
Interesting. I also don't understand why this hasn't become a massive story, the fact that the Netherlands has basically stopped building stuff.
I know. It's huge. Why aren't people talking about it?
Well, thank you for bringing this to our attention, Dominic. Let's go to Poland.
Yeah, let's. Where over the last months and years, we've seen a stream of alarming reports coming from Polish pride marches. There's been this pattern developing in which marches are attacked by mobs from the far right. This happened just last week in Lubin, but it happened over the summer in Białystok. And our guest this week was there. The writer Jacek Denel was invited to speak at the march as a prominent gay Polish writer. We gave him a call to find out what happened.
I guess the first thing we wanted to talk about was you wrote recently about what happened when people tried to stage the first ever gay pride march in Białystok in July, which I think was a pretty horrible experience. If you're comfortable talking about it, can you tell us what happened that day?
I came there rather accidentally, I can say. A friend of mine was one of the organizers of the march. He comes from Białystok. He asked me whether I would be willing to hold a speech as a relatively well-known Polish gay person. Not knowingly what's going to happen, I agreed. And there I was, expecting somehow that it's going to be rough and difficult, because Białystok is very traditional. It's in the east of Poland, which is more conservative. And also there was a long-lasting action against it. So there were protests, and the local bishop said that the Catholics will not allow the march to pass the city. And I knew that the football hooligans are gathering there and that they are going to protest. But we face different kinds of protests in Poland. In Warsaw, it's rather mild. In other cities, it depends on the city. But it's rarely really dangerous. And Białystok was the most dangerous of all. We didn't know it back then. We started from a rather calm and secluded area in the center, and we went towards the square where the march was going to start. And I was supposed to hold my siege there, but it was absolutely impossible. On our way there, we encountered very dangerous groups which were just attacking people, beating them, kicking. We found a shelter in a drugstore. There was a girl who was attacked, and she was in shock. And it was all pretty dramatic. But then we joined the march, and that was really insane. There were huge crowds of people shouting most terrible insults. They were throwing things. They were throwing rotten eggs. They were throwing stones. And the police, in this moment, in the very beginning of the march, had really trouble with dividing the groups, the marching people and the protesters. People were just dragged from the march and attacked. The level of aggression, the level of fury of the protesters was really overwhelming. I described that quite detailed in my text that you can read in English in The Guardian. And the march has passed through the city, which is, I think, the most important thing here. But we are totally aware of the fact that if it wasn't the police that protected us, it would be a massacre, basically. And a few days ago, there was another march in Lublin, which was also attacked last year, not as dangerously as in Białystok, but also it was like the second worst. And this time in Lublin, it was also quite rough. And the most shocking thing is news that was revealed afterwards, after the march, by the Polish police. So there was a married couple who brought self-made bombs to the march. They were arrested, the bombs were taken from them. But we have like first right-wing terrorists who actually brought explosives to a gay march in Poland.
It's absolutely horrible to hear that this is repeating itself again and again. What are the authorities saying about this in response?
Well, of course, it came as a shock. I mean, even the people who, like the local politicians from the ruling party or the local bishop, who are very much against the march and who organized those protests and who gave the fuel to this hatred, even they were afraid of what happened afterwards. So the bishop condemned the physical attack, although he's, in my opinion, responsible morally for instigating the hatred. These politicians, both in the city of Białystok and in the central government, it was non-apologetic apology. So they would say, like, we are against attacking the traditional family, and yet we will not condone physical violence or this kind of stuff. And the gay community is now one of the most important subjects of the political campaign. We have our elections very soon. And basically, the state TV is all the time showing disgusting propaganda materials about the gay community, full of lies. It's really appalling, and nobody's putting any stop to it.
What kind of thing can you see on the TV?
It's like things that you can expect, so that gay people want to educate children, they want to molest children, that there is some kind of conspiracy of gay people against the church, and they screen footage of a man actually using an axe and destroying an altar in a church, but it has absolutely nothing to do with the gay community. It was an insane man who actually went into a church and who attacked the altar with an axe. But it has absolutely no connection to the gay community. And actually, there were a few instances that priests were attacked in Poland. None of these attacks have anything to do with gay community. And they are shown as a sort of violence of the gay community against the Catholic Church. So we have all kinds of things like that. And it's really getting really worse and worse. But on the other hand, on a more happy note, last year we had like 20 marches. This year we have 25, I think. So this is a rapidly growing movement of especially young people who want to organize marches in their cities. And this is a brand new thing. So what you see is also a reaction to the growing power of the gay movement and to the courage of those people who don't want to go for a march to Warsaw only, but they want to bring the tolerance and gay rights to their small communities, sometimes quite small cities. And this is quite interesting. Also, the fact that in Poles, the hatred against gay people and attitude towards gay rights is changing in a very bizarre way. So on one hand, if you have a group of young men, the thing that they are scared most, more than, I know, economical crisis, climate change, whatever, is LGBT community.
Why though?
Because of all the propaganda. So they generally believe that if gay people are going to get married, I don't know, something terrible will happen to their families, whatever. I mean, like, the propaganda is absolutely overwhelming. But on the other hand, there's a growing acceptance for the gay rights. And now we have 60% people for the civil partnerships. We have almost half of the society is for the gay marriages. And about 60 is for accepting gay marriages that were established outside of Poland. So basically, you cannot get married in Poland, but you can go to, I don't know, London, get married, come back, and you're a married couple.
This is all happening within the European Union, and LGBT rights are protected under European law. Do you think that Poland's neighbours should be doing more to speak up against the kind of homophobia that people have to live with in Poland?
Well, that would be certainly very nice, but I don't think that anyone cares, really.
Being serious, that would be great. And of course, we really need support, especially with this kind of propaganda that we have in the state media and within the Catholic Church. The things that Polish bishops say, even for Catholic Church, they are unorthodox. They are going far beyond what is accepted in the general teachings of the Church. There was this one bishop who said the infamous words about rainbow disease that he compared to a totalitarian communist regime. But also, it is perhaps even more significant that he was not condemned by any of the bishops. Quite to the contrary, the bishops actually supported him, and there was not a single voice against him. So this is the state of the top Catholic hierarchy. And it also goes down, of course, because it goes through the local priests, the local communities. Politically, of course, we do hope that a few couples that started this long legal path of going all the way to the European tribunals with their cases for getting married in Poland will finally manage to get to the top of that process and have a sentence of the European tribunal that would force Poland to recognize gay marriages or gay partnerships this way or another. But of course, the problem with the present government in Poland is that it's really not interested in acting according to the law, to put it mildly. So they just say, okay, this is an opinion of the European Union and we don't have to do anything with that.
Your own marriage, of course, you married your husband in London, I think?
Yeah.
So your marriage is not recognised in Poland?
No.
But as you say, I mean, like, some things do seem to be changing. Like, in terms of day-to-day life, is it easier to be gay in Poland today than when you first came out?
I would say yes and no. So on one hand, yes. 3 years of work of plenty of people, the society is getting there slowly and understanding that some people are gay and just a fact of life. People are just more used to someone saying, this is my husband. But of course, on the other hand, you have the backlash. So you have lots of aggression in the internet. There's plenty of hate speech. And the problem is that in Poland, hate speech is not prosecuted by law. So it is when it is about your race, your ethnicity, your gender, but it's not when it's about the sexual orientation.
Wow.
So you have plenty of hate and you have physical violence. The worst toll is, of course, with the school kids. The LGBT kids, I think, are the most vulnerable here. Young people are 5 times more prone to suicidal thoughts. It was, I think, 12% within the community of young people and 60% within the gay young people community.
Yeah. It sounds like it's a really bad situation in Poland. And yet you and your husband are positive role models for a lot of these young LGBT people. You are both writers, and I wanted to ask you quickly about that side of your life. Together you write historical murder mystery novels together, one of which has just been published in English, and I think the other is also going to be translated soon. How do you go about writing a murder mystery with another person?
Well, we've established this pattern. So first, Piotr picks a particular historical moment. Then he searches for the interesting things that happened then that we can include. We formed a plot together that would somehow allude to those important facts or also interesting historical figures. And then when we have the plan, we just move from one chapter to another. We have them divided in scenes, and Piotr picks some scenes, I pick another one. We write them, we stitch them together, and we proceed to the next chapter. It's really quite simple. Crime novel is such a rigid form, actually. It's a very simple story. There is a crime, usually a murder, at least one. The storyline that guides you to the moment when the detective reveals the murder. And this is it. You have all kinds of things happening in between. But the most important backbone of this story is just this one thing. So, of course, you can have many variations, you can play with many topics, etc., but in the end, it is quite simple, actually.
Maybe we should write one together, Dominic.
I think that's a terrible idea. We should leave it to the professionals. Coincidence, one of my colleagues here that I'm singing with was actually also invited to sing at that march in Białystok, because she's from there, but couldn't make it. It was not a very interesting thing to share, actually.
Thank you for letting us know that you have a friend. Is that what this is about proving?
Yeah.
Jacek's piece about the Gay Pride March in Białystok is well worth a read. We will post a link in the show notes. And some of his poetry and novels are now also available in English. We will link to those too. I think I could do with a happy ending, if you would be kind enough to oblige me.
Last Friday, a very dramatic boat chase took place off the coast of Malaga. A police boat was pursuing a speedboat with suspected drug smugglers on board.
Uh-oh.
The chase took a turn for the worse and the boats crashed, with three police officers falling overboard. What did the suspected drug smugglers do? They stopped and helped rescue the three officers to safety.
Oh,
what nice
not
criminals.
For the first time on this podcast, I find myself congratulating criminals. Well done, drug smugglers.
Yeah.
Wait, are they actually drug smugglers or like suspected drug smugglers?
Well, I'm saying suspected because I don't think they've gone through the courts yet, but unfortunately for them, this kind gesture, I don't think helped them, because the police officers found 3 tons of hashish on their boat and the smugglers were arrested. But hey, I was happy to see that people will help save the lives of fellow humans, even if it is very much not in their own self-interest.
We're away next week, I'm sorry to have to tell you listeners. But before you accuse us of slacking off, it is for a good cause, because I'm going to be in Lithuania hanging out with a very special old lady for a special episode that we're working on. We do have to start releasing these special episodes at some point, Dominic. We can't just keep people on tenterhooks forever.
No, I know. But we also need time to actually edit them.
We want them to be really good. So thank you all for your patience. The end of the year is going to be a bonanza. So we're going to be away next week. But in the meantime, you can find us hanging out on the secret Facebook group available to our Patreon subscribers, where people post loads of interesting things to read, as well as pictures of our tote bags in quite weird places. It's really fun. And it's full of kind, generous people who are helping to make our podcast bigger and better by donating a couple of dollars a month or more. To join us, you can subscribe at patreon.com/Europeans Podcast.
We've got a few people to thank this week. We've got 2 new subscribers, Tobias Hagedorn Rasmussen and Mona Bulgaru. Thank you both so much for joining our little clan. Should I describe us as a clan? I'm not sure.
Maybe not. If you're strapped for cash but still want to support the show, you can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or say nice things about us on social media. You can do that on Twitter at EuropeansPod, on Instagram at EuropeansPodcast, and we're around on Facebook as well if you just type in The Europeans. So we'll be back in 2 weeks' time.
If you want some ideas with what else to fill your podcast feed up with, can I recommend the latest episode of Trump Inc., which is all about Ukraine and the Trump connection there. It's really interesting reporting, and I know some of you come here specifically to avoid Trump, so I'm sorry for mentioning him. But if you would like to find out the European connection, then check out that latest episode. It's called Ukraine.
That will keep us busy for the next 2 weeks, I'm sure. In the meantime, since I'm brushing up my Lithuanian, iki pasimatimo. See you later.
Bye.